escuelas oficiales de idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias. Pruebas de certificación de nivel intermedio B2 de inglés. Convocatoria ordinaria de 2021 para población escolar. Prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta parte consta de 3 tareas. Escuchará cada grabación 2 veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícela según se indica. Las respuestas escritas a lápiz o en tinta roja no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso del teléfono móvil queda prohibido durante toda la prueba y tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. No escriba en los recuadros sombreados. Son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to part of a motivational speech about young Albert Einstein and decide if the sentences are true, T, or false, F, according to what you hear. Sentence 0 has been given as an example. You have 1 minute to read the sentences. Write your answer in the grid provided.
Albert Einstein grew up in a middle-class family. When he was born, his family was scared that something was wrong with him. He had a very large and misshapen head. But fortunately, within the first few weeks, the shape of his head became normal. But their worries didn't stop there. When he was very young, his parents thought he might be intellectually disabled, because he was very slow to learn to talk and did not speak until he was 4 years old. At that time, he often formed full sentences in his thoughts, but did not speak. He used to practice the sentences in his head or whisper them softly under his breath until he got them right, and then say them aloud. Many people believed Einstein would never succeed at anything. When he was 5 years old, his father showed him a simple pocket compass, and Einstein was fascinated, and that was the beginning of his obsession with science. He also began playing the violin at the age of 6 and would continue to play throughout his life. At school, Einstein was a good student. Most of his grades were high and he was near the top of his class, but mainly because of math and science, so his grades depended mostly on his interest in the subject. When Einstein was only 10 years old, he started educating himself. By the age of 12, Einstein taught himself geometry, and by the age of 15, he mastered calculus. But he hated the disciplined and rigid style of the teachers, so he dropped out of school at the age of 15 and left Germany to avoid military service. His parents were worried that their son became a school dropout with no employable skills and not very promising future. But Albert Einstein did not quit his education. He applied to the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, and believe it or not, he failed the entrance exam.
Listen again.
Albert Einstein grew up in a middle-class family. When he was born, his family was scared that something was wrong with him. He had very large and misshapen head. But fortunately, within the first few weeks, the shape of his head became normal. But their worries didn't stop there. When he was very young, his parents thought he might be intellectually disabled, because he was very slow to learn to talk and did not speak until he was 4 years old. At that time, he often formed full sentences in his thoughts, but did not speak. He used to practice the sentences in his head or whisper them softly under his breath until he got them right, and then say them aloud. Many people believed Einstein would never succeed at anything. When he was 5 years old, his father showed him a simple pocket compass, and Einstein was fascinated, and that was the beginning of his obsession with science. He also began playing the violin at the age of 6 and would continue to play throughout his life. At school, Einstein was a good student. Most of his grades were high and he was near the top of his class, but mainly because of math and science. So his grades depended mostly on his interest in the subject. When Einstein was only 10 years old, he started educating himself. By the age of 12, Einstein taught himself geometry, and by the age of 15, he mastered calculus. But he hated the disciplined and rigid style of the teachers, so he dropped out of school at the age of 15 and left Germany to avoid military service. His parents were worried that their son became a school dropout with no employable skills and not very promising future. But Albert Einstein did not quit his education. He applied to the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, and believe it or not, he failed the entrance exam.
This is the end of task 1. Now turn to task 2. Task 2. Listen to a short speech on What Makes Us Human by human rights activist Peter Tatchell. Read the following items and choose the correct option A, B, or C. Item 0 has been given as an example. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Write your answers in the grid provided.
Protest makes us human. Without it, where would we be? We'd still be living in the dark ages of serfdom, tyrant kings, slavery, and child labor. Every social reform in history has been the result of dedicated, brave women and men who've protested against injustice. None of our precious rights and freedoms were freely given to us by people in power. They were hard won and came about as a result of protests. It's thanks to the Chartists and suffragettes that we've all got the right to vote. Likewise, it was protests that secured social welfare provisions like pensions and child benefit, plus the National Health Service and free schooling. We would not be human without our instinct and drive to protest against things we disagree with. It is our unwillingness to accept bad things and our willingness to fight for good things that makes us truly human. Of course, what is good and what is bad is a subjective judgment. So you can have protests from the right as well as from the left and the center. Either way, protest is the lifeblood of democracy. It is the means by which we, the people, hold the rich and powerful to account. It's a vital mechanism for the defense of democracy and liberty against the abuse of state and corporate power. Indeed, you could say that protest is the most direct form of democracy. Protesters don't leave it to MPs, they do it for themselves, and through their own efforts, bring about social change. Securing a fair society is far too important to be left to politicians. They are often the last people to wake up to the need for change. Much of the time, pressure for social reform is first initiated outside of Parliament by campaign groups like Amnesty International, Greenpeace, Animal Aid, and so on. Their extra-parliamentary protests are nearly always the initial sparks and catalysts of social reform. Three of my inspirations are Mahatma Gandhi, Sylvia Pankhurst, and Martin Luther King. They all use protest as a way of winning human rights and social justice. Faced with unresponsive governments, they staged street demonstrations, refused to pay taxes, and organized hunger strikes and sit-ins. By these means, India won its independence, women got the vote, and racial segregation was ended in the United States. Here in Britain, three decades ago, Margaret Thatcher's much-hated poll tax was defeated when hundreds of thousands refused to pay and protested in the streets. Opposition MPs had proven powerless to stop the poll tax. But when people protested en masse, Thatcher's flagship policy collapsed in one of the biggest political climb downs in modern British history. Protest is power to the people. Protest is what makes us human.
Listen again.
Protest makes us human. Without it, where would we be? We'd still be living in the dark ages of serfdom, tyrant kings, slavery, and child labor. Every social reform in history has been the result of dedicated, brave women and men who've protested against injustice. None of our precious rights and freedoms were freely given to us by people in power. They were hard won and came about as a result of protests. It's thanks to the Chartists and suffragettes that we've all got the right to vote. Likewise, it was protests that secured social welfare provisions like pensions and child benefit, plus the National Health Service and free schooling. We would not be human without our instinct and drive to protest against things we disagree with. It is our unwillingness to accept bad things and our willingness to fight for good things that makes us truly human. Of course, what is good and what is bad is a subjective judgment. So you can have protests from the right as well as from the left and the center. Either way, protest is the lifeblood of democracy. It is the means by which we, the people, hold the rich and powerful to account. It's a vital mechanism for the defense of democracy and liberty against the abuse of state and corporate power. Indeed, you could say that protest is the most direct form of democracy. Protesters don't leave it to MPs, they do it for themselves, and through their own efforts, bring about social change. Securing a fair society is far too important to be left to politicians. They are often the last people to wake up to the need for change. Much of the time, pressure for social reform is first initiated outside of Parliament by campaign groups like Amnesty International, Greenpeace, Animal Aid, and so on. Their extra-parliamentary protests are nearly always the initial sparks and catalysts of social reform. Three of my inspirations are Mahatma Gandhi, Sylvia Pankhurst, and Martin Luther King. They all used protest as a way of winning human rights and social justice. Faced with unresponsive governments, they staged street demonstrations, refused to pay taxes, and organized hunger strikes and sit-ins. By these means, India won its independence, women got the vote, and racial segregation was ended in the United States. Here in Britain, three decades ago, Margaret Thatcher's much-hated poll tax was defeated when hundreds of thousands refused to pay and protested in the streets. Opposition MPs had proven powerless to stop the poll tax. But when people protested en masse, Thatcher's flagship policy collapsed in one of the biggest political climb downs in modern British history. Protest is power to the people. Protest is what makes us human.
This is the end of task 2. Now turn to task 3. Task 3. Listen to an interview with Lindsay Vonn, one of the greatest alpine ski racers ever. Read the following questions and answer them with 1 to 8 words. Question 0 has been given as an example. You have 1 minute to read the sentences. Write your answer in the grid provided.
When you look back on these Olympics down the road, What will you remember most?
I'll think about how happy I was to be there, you know, to be racing for my grandfather. I couldn't have enjoyed it any more than I did, and I'll always remember that.
When you're on the medal stand, the emotions coming out of you, where did that come from?
I don't know. I mean, I thought I had finished crying. You know, I cried so much in the finish area after the race that I thought I was, you know, tapped out. But, you know, as soon as they called my name, I just lost it again. Waterworks. I don't know. I guess I'm getting a little more emotional in my old age. But I was overwhelmed, you know. I knew that was probably my last time getting up on the podium at the Olympics, and there was just an overwhelming feeling of gratitude and happiness.
You mentioned your grandfather. You told me a month or so ago that you wanted to come here and leave his ashes here. Can you tell me about the moment you did that?
Yeah, I mean, it was an emotional thing for me. I know that he would have wanted to have a piece of him in Korea where he spent so much time, but I wanted to do it before I raced so that I knew he was there with me. But I've never left ashes somewhere, so it was a weird feeling, you know, leaving part of my grandfather up there.
What runs through you as you're doing that?
I just told him that I wished that he could be here, and I knew he was looking out for me.
You have dealt with a lot of criticism online.
That's putting it nicely.
I'm curious how you deal with that. How did you deal with that while you were here?
I really tried not to read anything on social media. I've almost become numb to it. You know, there's just so much hate that I can't ever take any of it seriously. It's crazy.
Is it hard to get to that point?
Yeah, of course it's hard. You know, the first time you read, I hope you ski off a cliff and die. Like, that's a little aggressive. And, you know, it's like, wow, people dislike me that much that they hope that I die. You know, how does that makes me feel so terrible. And it was definitely hard to process. But the more hate I got, the more I realized that it doesn't matter. You know, people are going to say mean things about you all the time, but they're sitting behind a computer and they're not people that you care about.
What sort of a message would you want to send to people who were celebrating that you didn't win gold? Or
I don't know. I feel sorry for them that they could be so hateful that they wish failure on a fellow American. I mean, we're the melting pot. We have so many different beliefs and religions and cultures, and we all come together under one flag. And just because someone has a difference of opinion doesn't mean you should wish that they fail or die or just wish hate on them. That's not what our country's about at all. So, I don't know, I feel sorry for them. I would like to give them a hug.
Will this be your last Olympics?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure.
What would it take for you to compete in 4 years?
A new knee. If you can do that, can you give me that, Wayne?
I can do my best.
Can you give me a new knee?
Listen again.
When you look back on these Olympics down the road, what will you remember most?
I'll think about how happy I was to be there, you know, to be racing for my grandfather. I couldn't have enjoyed it any more than I did, and I'll always remember that.
When you're on the medal stand, the emotions coming out of you, where did that come from?
I don't know. I mean, I thought I had finished crying. You know, I cried so much in the finish area after the race that I thought I was, you know, tapped out. But, you know, as soon as they called my name, I just lost it again. Waterworks. I don't know. I guess I'm getting a little more emotional in my old age. But I was overwhelmed, you know. I knew that was probably my last time getting up on the podium at the Olympics, and it was just an overwhelming feeling of gratitude and happiness.
You mentioned your grandfather. You told me a month or so ago that you wanted to come here and leave his ashes here. Can you tell me about the moment you did that?
Yeah, I mean, it was an emotional thing for me. I know that he would have wanted to have a piece of him in Korea where he spent so much time, but I wanted to do it before I raced so that I knew he was there with me. But I've never left ashes somewhere, so it was a weird feeling, you know, leaving part of my grandfather up there.
What runs through you as you're doing that?
I just told him that I wished that he could be here, and I knew he was looking out for me.
You have dealt with a lot of criticism online.
That's putting it nicely.
I'm curious how you deal with that. How did you deal with that while you were here?
I really tried not to read anything on social media. I've almost become numb to it. You know, there's just so much hate that I can't ever take any of it seriously. It's crazy.
Is it hard to get to that point?
Yeah, of course it's hard. You know, the first time you read, I hope you ski off a cliff and die. Like, that's a little aggressive. And, you know, it's like, wow, people dislike me that much that they hope that I die. You know, how does that makes me feel so terrible. And it was definitely hard to process. But the more hate I got, the more I realized that it doesn't matter. You know, people are going to say mean things about you all the time, but they're sitting behind a computer and they're not people that you care about.
What sort of a message would you want to send to people who were celebrating that you didn't win gold? Or
I don't know. I feel sorry for them that they could be so hateful that they wish failure on a fellow American. I mean, we're the melting pot. We have so many different beliefs and religions and cultures, and we all come together under one flag. And just because someone has a difference of opinion doesn't mean you should wish that they fail or die or just wish hate on them. That's not what our country's about at all. So, I don't know. I feel sorry for them. I would like to give them a hug.
Will this be your last Olympics?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure.
What would it take for you to compete in 4 years?
A new knee. If you can do that, can you give me that, Wayne?
I can do my best.
Can you give me a new knee?
This is the end of Task 3 and the end of the listening test.